Thank you very much. So first, I will start by describing what unparticle physics is and why we are interested in it. So we imagine this very simple scenario that we have a standard model, but there is also some hidden sector that couples to the standard model perturbatively through the exchange of some heavy particle of mass capital M. But the hidden sector runs at low energy to some possibly strongly coupled theory. And it has an infrared fixed point. Below the energies of the infrared fixed point, this theory is described by a scale invariant theory, which is in general also conformal. Why are we interested in this kind of scenario? There are two types of reasons. First reason is that we are going to get very interesting physics here, because the conformal theory cannot be described in terms of the collection of particles. And there's an interesting question, what will the standard model see when it is interacting with this theory? The second reason is more practical, and it is the fact that the hidden sectors generically appear in various extensions of the standard model. And it is also not uncommon that hidden sector will have an infrared fixed point. And therefore, we must know how these things behave so that we recognize them once we detect them in experiments. Let me give you an example of the most simplest processes in unparticle physics. So we consider, just as an example, the interaction of this type where two standard model P coupled to some operator of the conformal theory. One process that we can imagine is the process in which the two standard model particles collide and give this unparticle stuff that corresponds to the operator O. And another type of process we can consider is that the unparticle stuff interferes with some standard model process in this way. These are the most dominant type of processes in terms of the cross-section with two powers of this small coupling constant. How can we calculate these kind of processes? Well, with this appearance process, we can use the optical theorem to consider this diagram that involves a particle propagating between two points, and use the optical theorem taking the imaginary part of this diagram. Here again, if we know the two-point function of this unparticle operator, we can also compute this thing. How do we know the two-point function of the unparticle operator? Well, there are not so many options. There is a very strong restriction of scale invariance, which implies that the two-point function of any operator in conformal theory must have the form of x squared to some power, where this power is called the dimension of the operator. The very important case that is also pretty common is that these dimensions are fractional. This is when unparticle physics has the interesting effects. We can take this into momentum space, and the momentum space two-point function is also p squared to some fractional power. And we can write also in terms of the spectral density. So instead of having a pole with a particular mass of some particle, this spectral density is continuous. And this is very special for the unparticle sector. Taking the imaginary part of the propagator, we get something that is non-zero for any value of p squared and depends on fractional power of p squared. The imaginary part is what we need for this process in order to compute the cross-section of this disappearance process. And we'll get cross-section depends on the fractional power of momentum. What is it similar to? Well, if we look already here, we can see that consider a massless particle. When you have a massless particle, its propagator is 1 over x squared. Well, when we have du massless particles connected between the same two points, this will be their propagator, except that du is fractional. So this looks like a fractional number of particles for this disappearance process. It also creates an interesting contribution here an interference, because instead of the imaginary part being non-zero only when the particle is close to mass shell, here it is non-zero for any value of p squared. And there has been a lot of work on the implications of these various areas of phenomenology, cosmology, and such. But this is not the topic of my talk today. The topic of my talk is to work on more complicated features of unparticle physics that I will describe in the next slide. One question that I'm going to address is what happens at the energies between the unparticle scale and the high scale M. Above the unparticle scale, the theory is not conformal anymore, and it is hard to know what exactly to expect, and how the transition goes between this low energy scalar theory is conformal and the perturbative high energy behavior. A second related question is how the unparticle hidden sector is related to QCD-like hidden sectors. Because in QCD, we also have a theory that becomes strongly coupled at low energies, but it doesn't have scale invariance. We will have something interesting to say about it. And the last aspect that we are going to discuss is the effect of the self-interaction of the unparticle sector. This is necessary to answer questions like the decay of the unparticle stuff after we created it. Of course, we are interested in decays that involve also the production of standard model particles, because standard model particles is what we can observe. And how about the production of unparticle stuff that corresponds to the operators in the conformal theory, other than the one that is coupled directly to the standard model? In order to answer this kind of questions, we have to consider something like this. It schematically represents two standard model particles colliding, and what is created is standard model particles and some unparticle stuff. I denote U prime to say that this unparticle stuff could be different from particle stuff that is created in the disappearance process. We'll still consider exactly the same type of coupling to the standard model. Of course, this coupling cannot describe this process, but the interaction of the operator OU with itself and with other operators of the conformal theory will allow it to happen. Then interesting questions to ask are what information about the CFT is needed in order to make some definite statements about this kind of processes, because even though the form of the two-point function is constrained, as I explained, as I told before, this is not the case for higher endpoint functions that will be relevant to the analysis of these processes. And the second question is how to do computations. So in order to study these issues, we're using a toy model in two dimensions. The toy model is very simple. This is essentially a model of a massless fermion interacting with a massive vector field. If we had just these first two terms, this would be the Schwinger model. But here we're adding also an additional bare mass term for the vector boson. And this theory has been studied before by Sommerfeld and by other people, so we call it the Sommerfeld model. This will be our unparticle safe. Why are we interested in this kind of theory? Well, first of all, this theory becomes scale invariant at low energies below the mass of the vector boson, similar to the Schwinger model. But it also has fractional nonmodular dimensions. Well, Schwinger model doesn't have fractional nonmodular dimensions, despite the impact of Schwinger model. And we went to two dimensions for the reason that many models, including this one, are exactly solvable. So we can compute all the correlation functions of our unparticle sector. The standard model will be represented by a complex scalar field. This will be like some standard model field. We consider the following interaction between two standard model fields and an operator of the unparticle sector that is this fermion bilinear. This interaction has conserved the U1 charge, which is just the usual charge of the complex scalar and the axial symmetry of the fermion. Here I may mention that the mass m squared is determined by this Baer term plus this term that arises due to the axial anomaly. This second term exists also in the Schwinger model, and the gauge was on the Schwinger model masses. I told you this is exactly solvable theory, so let's solve it. We are changing variables. We can write any vector in two dimensions in terms of two scalars like this. And then we can redefine the fermion variable in this way. And this brings us to Lagrangian, in which the fermion field is free, except for psi doesn't have any interactions with the gauge boson. And here we change m0 to m squared to account for the anomaly, as I just told you. And then we can compute any correlation function. Any correlation function of the original fermion fields will be a correlation function of three fermions times these factors that we use to redefine the fermionic variable. And it is very easy to account for them because we can read off their two-point functions directly from Lagrangian. For V, it is just the massless scalar with some unconventional normalization. For A, it's something a little bit more complicated, but it can be written as a combination of a massive scalar and a massless scalar. Therefore, we can compute anything we like. In particular, what we want to compute is, for example, the two-point function of this operator O to which we couple. Using this method, the result is the following, a function C of x that is given here, divided by x squared. C of x involves the appropriate combination of the massive and the massless boson propagators. This is massive boson propagator. This is a massless boson propagator. More specifically, the massive one is just a Bessel function, and the massless in two dimensions is the log x squared. Here we define this C. It is just a constant number. What happens at different limits? At short distances compared to the mass of the vector boson, C goes to 1. And we get just 1 over x squared. This is actually the free fermion limit. If you consider this O and just doing the contractions between fermions and see if they are free fields, you get this 1 over x squared. This is what happens at high energies. At low energies, large distances, we have a Bessel function that does not contribute. And the result is just x squared to some power. Well, what happened here, maybe I should say, is just because at large distances, there's no distinction between the masses and the massless propagators that just cancel each other. The mass doesn't matter.
So if you turn off M0, what happens to the dimension? It's E squared over.
Oh, we'll see it now, right? That's a good question. So let's consider the unparticle limit. We have this unparticle propagator that is 1 over x squared to the power 1 plus a, where we define a as follows. A is the anomalous dimension. It depends in the following way on the parameters of the theory, and it can have any values of minus 1 and 0. When m0 is equal to 0, that corresponds to the Schwinger model, we get a equals minus 1. Very similar to what I described in the case of four dimensions, so we have the momentum space things, this function a of a, just some constants used here. We can compute the phase space by taking the imaginary part of the propagator again. And again, back to your question, in the Schwinger model, we have a little a equals minus 1, so this prefactor vanishes. There is no unparticle stuff in the Schwinger model, which is not surprising, because otherwise we would have known about it, probably. So we said that in our particle limit, means that the energy of our process is much less than the mass m, we can have the production of unparticle stuff with the cross-section depends on fractional power of s. On the other hand, we also have the high energy limit. In high energy limit, this process just corresponds to the production of two fermions. And this is the cross section. The interesting question, the first question that we are going to answer, is what happens in between? How do this and this, what connects between them and the intermediate energies? Of course, we can easily answer this question because we have the full solution of the theory. So we're looking at the full two-point function. It's the same thing that I presented to you before. It's convenient to write it the following way as the unparticle limit two-point function that came from this term times what comes from this term, which is the exponent of the massive boson propagator. Then we can expand the exponent in Taylor series. And by looking at here, we now know what's the meaning of this two-point function. What we see here is an unparticle line, like we considered before, a particle line, connected to an arbitrary number n of massive bosons. And when we will do optical theorem on this, what will be emitted is the unparticle stuff plus this massive boson. This is the phase space, right? That can be shown directly from here. Just again, this is just unparticle space, phase space combined with the phase space of massive bosons. It is hard to compute these many integrals, but we can consider a situation that A is small. Because each new term comes with an additional power of n. So to leading order in n, we have the contribution from the unparticle process, the expansion to linear order in n, plus from the process in which we have unparticle stuff and the single boson emitted. What does this mean, how it looks like? Well, this is a plot of cross-section as a function of the energy. We see that below the mass of the vector boson, we have pure unparticle behavior. This is clear, of course, from here, because if the energy is less than the mass of the scalar cannot be created. On the other hand, above this mass, we have a flat answer at 1/2, that actually exactly corresponds to the high energy free fermion limit. It corresponds just to this process. So we see that we have a sharp transition here between pure unparticle behavior and the free fermion behavior. At higher orders in A, so this plot corresponds to A equals minus 0.1. At higher orders in A, we will similarly have several thresholds here instead of one. Depending on the accuracy you want, there will be needed more and more massive bosons in addition to the unparticle stuff in order to account for the short distance free fermion cross section.
So can I ask you something? So what does it mean to have to make this unparticle? Are they going to fill the box with unparticles, or is it going to go to something else? Or?
So, of course, the most useful questions to ask are what happens to the standard model particles, right? Because this is what we can observe. So in this case, the dominant process that I described, for example, disappearance process, is a process in which standard model just disappears in one particle stack. So we'll see standard model and missing energy. Standard model colliding and missing energy. Further, we are going to discuss processes in which standard model is colliding, and there is also some standard model is emitted, and some particle stuff is emitted as well. So based on the standard model, we always know the missing energy.
Well, so that's like the particle, let's say in the cosmology, for example, I produce these unparticles, do they overclose the universe, for example?
So this is definitely an interesting question, of course. It depends on the number of degrees of freedom that you have in conformal theory. It can be different numbers for different theories. For example, if you consider some SUN theory, then it will depend just on the number n, the number of degrees of freedom. We'll go like n squared, I guess. And It will depend on the number of degrees of freedom and the strength of the coupling.
So you say I can define an energy density for on particles, for example. Is that the reason?
So that's on particles, because this is a conformal theory, at least at low energy. Of course, for small g, you might be interested also in the transition to the higher energies, and theory is not standardized anymore. But for example, in conformal regime, the trace of the stress energy tensor vanishes. So the equation of state is just like of radiation. And there have been some works on this, how unparticle stuff could fit or not fit for various issues in cosmology. So what the conclusion we can summarize here is, in the Sommerfeld model, free fermions at short distances correspond to unparticle stuff plus bosons at large distances. We can compare this to the Schwinger model. In the Schwinger model, the same type of analysis was done many years ago. And what you see there is just the free fermions that you have at short distances correspond only to bosons without particle stuff. Of course, the Schwinger model is it was an example for QCD. In QCD, you have weakly interacting quarks and gluons, but you don't see them. Instead, you see hadrons. And Sommerfeld model is in a similar way a model for a particle sector. It will also have some kind of hadrons. But also, in addition to them, there will be the particle stuff. It doesn't have to be the case, but this is definitely a reasonable possibility, at least for some types of particle sector. Now let's go to the second important thing that we were studying, which is the effect of the particle self interactions. This kind of processes in which we have some more particles colliding, and then not just some particle stuff is emitted, but something more complicated. The standard model is emitted, and some particle stuff is denoted by U prime to say maybe it is different from the particle stuff that is emitted in this Pierce process. How are we going to compute this? Well, we can, similar to the optical theorem, we can use the cutting rules and use them on the four-point function. Here we'll have two standard models coming in, and the two standard mole coming out. And then particle stuff is going here inside the four-point function. And we're taking discontinuity across the cut to compute the inclusive cross-section, inclusive over the particle stuff, inclusive cross-section of this process. But what is the four-point function of our operator? So in conformal theory, there is a restriction on four-point functions. And they have the following form. Here, xij is just the distance between two points ij. And the u and v are these ratios that are conformally invariant. The four-point function can have an arbitrary function of these two ratios. And again, the fact is like this. This can be written in many different forms. This is the basic idea, that the four-point function has some powers of x squared in the numerator and some powers of x squared in the denominator. I mean, if you expand this function f in a series in U and V, for example, this is the type of contribution that you will have. Of course, our Sommerfeld model also has four-point function that has this form. Our exact solution gives us the following exact answer, that we have some unparticle propagators that I mentioned before, or more generally, all propagators in the numerator and some old propagators in the denominator. In the unparticle limit, where the theory is conformal, each of these propagators is just x squared to some power. And so we have exactly the same general form. And I believe that when we study this model, the issues that arise in the general model will be pretty similar. So how are we going to solve this? Well, let's represent this four-point function graphically. So what we can do is to put O star here, O here, two phis coming in, two phis going out, a particle star going in between. The solid lines denote here the propagators in the numerator, while the dotted lines denote the propagators in the denominator. This is how we can represent it graphically. There's also another process that we have in our theory. This is a process in which two phis collide and produce two anti-phis plus unparticle stuff. the charge goes into the unparticle section. And if it's the same four-point function, I just put O star here and O star here. So this can absorb two phis, and this can emit two anti-phis. So how are we doing computation with these processes? Well, first, what we can do is just take all these ingredients into momentum space. When we have the solid line, we have just the O propagator that I already mentioned before, which is an unparticle propagator times all this massive boson. And for the propagator of the dotted line, we need to take the Fourier transform of 1 over the O propagator. This is the result. Here we again have massive bosons. Here we have some power of P squared. You may notice that this includes some infrared divergences. Of course, it will include infrared divergences because the unparticle propagator goes like it decreases with distance. One of the unparticle propagator will, of course, grow with distance. So infrared divergences are expected. But we were able to resolve these infrared divergences in a way that I don't have time to explain today. And we were able to compute these diagrams, at least in some regimes. And again, I will not have time to show this to you, but this will be included in the paper to appear soon. Of course, once we compute this cross-section, an important question to ask is what this cross-section describes. Could naively think that the cross-section here describes the production of 4 units of our old unparticle stuff, because we just cut through 4 unparticle lines. Of course, this cannot exactly be the case because of conservation of charge. In the disappearance process, we had the 2 phis giving 1 solid line. And it means that the charge of the solid line there was 2. But here, this will not be consistent, so it cannot be exactly that. In this process, this kind of interpretation would be even more mysterious, because you would think that you are producing 2 units of stuff corresponding to the usual unparticle stuff, and 2 units corresponding to 1 over this. But again, this dotted line has an infrared divergence and has a negative dimension, which is not a consistent thing. And luckily, this is not the interpretation that we need to adopt. Instead, we can look at this process somewhat differently and understand what exactly is produced there. Right, so this is the question we're going to answer in the next slide. Let's consider this process. And suppose we call the momentum of the incoming solid mole particles capital P, while the momentum of particle stuff Q is much less than P. In this limit, we expect that the diagrams that contribute are those in which these 2 points are very close to each other, and this also close to each other compared to the total distance. In this situation, we can use the operator product expansion, where the product of 2 operators is equal to their 2-point function, plus some coefficients times other operators that appear in the theory. The coefficients here are the function of zeta. Zeta are the little distances here and here. While capital X will denote the total distance from here to here. With the operator product expansion, when using it twice, we can write the 4-point function in the following form. The first term here doesn't depend on capital X, so the cut will not give us anything. This is just like a disconnected diagram, and it just corresponds to the fact that we know that in position space, the solid line and the dotted line cancel each other. The next terms here have a nice form, because when we are taking the discontinuity across the cut, the imaginary part, we know now what will be produced. What will be produced, this is the only thing that depends on x through which we cut, will be produced the particle stuff that corresponds to the other operators in the theory. Operators that appear in the operator product expansion of our operators O and O star. Last question I would like to discuss related to these processes is the following. Okay, so we were able to compute the inclusive cross sections by using the 4-point functions. But is it possible to compute just the amplitude for these processes and then take the square of the amplitude and compute the cross section this way? And the answer is yes. I mean, how can we understand this? In the most naive way, you could think that there is some vertex here that involves three operators, the operator here, here, and here. Of course, when they're computing such process with some vertex that in particle physics, we have to amputate this external leg. We don't take the propagator here. In other words, we have this three-point function. We define Q, that is the amputated three-point function, something that you, when multiplied by the propagator, gives the three-point function. And this Q should give us the amplitude M. Actually, it is important to note that the three-point function, and then also the amputated three-point function, is fixed by conformal symmetry. The only thing you need to know is the dimension and the spin of this operator O, in addition to what we already know about this operator O I that appears in, here on the external leg, in addition to what we already know about our operators. It is fixed up to a prefactor. And so this provides an alternative way to do these things. We used our knowledge of the four-point function. An alternative way would be to know what operators there exist in our theory, their dimensions and their spins, and use three-point functions. This approach could be interesting, and I don't know which one will be more useful for considering, for example, the four-dimensional phenomenology, and trying to find some generic features of these things. All this framework is not our idea. This is something that was known many years ago under the name conformal partial wave expansion, in which when you take the product of two operators, you can write it in the following form in terms of this amplitude three-point function and the other operator. When you are taking this expression into the four-point function, you create the four-point function by taking this twice. What you get is the following thing. You have Q star and Q, and this propagator in between. And if you want to compute the cross-section, you take a discontinuity across this propagator. This gives you the phase space, and this is the M star M. The conclusions. Now, first we saw that like the Schwinger model is a nice model of QCD, the Sommerfeld model could be a nice model of some particle sectors in four dimensions. And our analysis implies that we may expect to have hadrons of mass of the particle scale in addition to the particle stuff. And the last thing that we discussed is the effects that are created by higher endpoint functions of the conformal theory that are responsible to processes in which the unparticle stuff is not only produced but also decays into standard model and some other unparticle stuff. And this other unparticle stuff corresponds to the other operators that we have in the CFT. And we know how to compute these processes and how to deal with the IR divergences, even though I haven't explained it about it today. Thank you very much.
Thank for a few questions. Can we have first questions from non-particle physicists?
You mean non-particle?
Or
non-particle.
Any questions? In general?
So I have one question.
Okay. So could you imagine, so you presented a two-dimensional toy model. Is there something you have in mind, go more or less thinking about?
Yes, of course. So this general form of the four-point function that I presented, it is valid in all dimensions, also in four dimensions. Of course, in four dimensions, conformal theory are typically not exactly solvable. But it is quite possible to try to play with the not very much freedom that we have in the form of the four-point function and see what kind of results we get. I think it is possibly a very good direction of research and can give interesting results.
In some sense, ADS-CFT is a solvable example. So has there been any sort of trying to go in there?
Yeah, that's a very good question, the relation of unparticle physics to ADS-CFT. Of course, the two topics are related in some to some extent. There are advantages and disadvantages in the ADS-CFT approach. The disadvantage of the ADS-CFT approach is that they apply the theories in the limit of a large number of colors and a large toothed coupling, while there is no particular reason to believe that unparticle sectors should have these properties. But they can work nevertheless, like in the ABS-QCD program, but it would be on somewhat more shaky foundation. Another disadvantage of the ABS-CFT approach is that it is harder to couple the conformal sector to the standard model, or to just some subset of the standard model. Of course, the ABS pictures gives a lot of information about the conformal theory itself. But if we want to describe phenomenology of physics in four dimensions, we need not only this, but we want to have the full picture. Of course, you can modify the ABS-CFT picture, for example, to something like the Randall-Sundrum scenario, in which you do have a coupling of a conformal sector also to particle sector. But even in this situation, it is hard to convert from the description of the ABS picture to the exact description of a standard model. But overall,
it would be putting probe brains, right? So probe brains would be analog of your standard model for physics. And so those
Yes. In principle, there are many things that can be done there. And there were a couple of papers that discussed the interplay between the ABS-CFT description and the particle description.
So I had the question too, more on the practical side of things. So I thought the original interest was, George, I thought it would be amazing if we saw some signal that was like this at LHC. And I thought that it was pointed out subsequently that if you're coupling this with some heavy mediator, probably your unparticle sector with some heavy mediator to the standard model, and that is given for by Greenstein and Schrodinger and Rothstein, but then you're going to introduce contact interactions just by that heavy mediator between standard model fields, which will totally swamp any unparticle signal in reality.
This is a good point. This is a very good point, and actually this is also something that I can add to the answer to Alex's question. Is that you can also see exactly these contact terms in the ABS-CFT. And in the ABS, you just add these terms in order to regularize the theory, while in the standard model, they would, if you consider the coupling of the CFT to the standard model, they would be just the standard model contact terms that you mentioned. But okay, now answer to your question. It is true that these standard model contact terms are important, and in some situations, like you mentioned, they can be even stronger effect.
I thought it was generically.
No.
Just by the
No, they're not generic. It depends on the dimension of the operator. And they become important only for some branches of the dimension.
Okay, so what dimensions are they not dominating the particle?
So the dimensions between 1 and 2, I think.
Aren't those?
I think when the dimensions are above 2.
Consider some of those low dimensions because of unitary distributions.
So the entire constraint requires a dimensional scalar operator greater than 1. So the range between 1 and 2 is a good range.
Oh, so for scalars between 1 and 2, you're saying that
above 2, it's also not a disaster. It's just that you do need to take into account this contact term. The effects of the contact terms are qualitatively different from the unparticle effects. And this doesn't mean that the unparticle effects cannot be observed. But of course, the contact terms must be taken into account when you are dealing with the certain ranges of dimensions.
Yeah. Okay, so I think we'll stop there. Let's start at the beginning. Yep. Thank you.